You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practice Show. My name is Kirk Behrendt, and I got a pretty cool guest today. You know, in full transparency, I don't really know him. Like, we just met for a couple minutes, and he shared with me a few glimpses of his story, and I said, no, we got to save that for when we go on the air. And we're going to be talking about a very important subject, which is owners understanding ownership. And my guest today is Andre Sherdan. And so, Andre, nice to meet you officially. Like, really.
You too.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's been a long while. Now, I'm going to start at the beginning because we're going to talk about this concept. This is a concept I absolutely love, and I want to really flush it out and really understand how you're thinking about it. But I always like to start here. Like, I want to start with your story a little bit. Who are you before? We got a lot of dental students and young dentists now watching and listening. I want them to know who you are. So tell us your story.
Well, you know, this is my 33rd, going almost to my 33rd year in dentistry. Okay. And, you know, I kind of set myself up as being sort of Oz. You know, I don't want anybody to know who I am. I want to be in the background. But I started in dentistry because my sister married my dentist and brought me into the business. And I had no idea what I was going to do with helping him out. And literally, it started with, can I help my brother with his business? And it turned into going into the practice, working at the front desk, working chair side, doing everything, but doing it all from an outsider standpoint. I wanted to learn how to do this stuff without knowing dentistry, because I didn't want to be jaded by we always do it that way in dentistry.
Right.
So, you know, his practice was pretty small. And I came into the business as somebody who was trained by Disney and Ritz-Carlton. I sold really high-end retail. And I came in as this high-end salesman with the customer service training into a field that I had no knowledge of. And I came in with the idea that I was going to help my brother-in-law provide for my sister. That was literally what it was all about. And then I got wrapped up into helping him, helping his classmates, helping other dentists in the Philadelphia area where I'm from, and then taking that to stages across the country. And I mean, I've literally probably spoken every single state in the country. But just how to use the techniques and skills that I learned outside of dentistry and put them into dentistry. How to create periodontal programs that we've all learned from the clinical side, but how do we get our patients to accept it? How do we get our billing to work? And taking all of the things that I learned from the best in the business of dentistry and applying that to a patient-focused outcome instead of the business-focused outcome or the clinical outcome that a lot of people were talking about. So that's how I kind of got tricked into dentistry.
I'm digging this. Okay, so how many years now in dentistry?
So 2021, this will be 32 years.
Wow.
So 33 years in March. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And you shared with me, you're officially retired. Now, what does that mean? Like, I mean, you got to explain that one. I love that.
So,
and then you got to teach me.
You know, it's so funny. In my seminars, I always talk about, you know, I worked in the record industry until the record industry sort of collapsed. And, you know, and then I worked into fashion until my brother-in-law took me out of fashion. And then I worked in dentistry, literally in an office, until I had a car crash that got me out of And I said, I'm not going to be doing this commute back and forth to the office every day. Right. And I made that leap literally the day after my car crash. I booked a hotel room and got into consulting, literally going out there coaching and consulting dentists. And that ended on 9/11, where I couldn't fly anymore. That transitioned in. I sold the company that my consulting company to another company. I transitioned from coaching consulting to working for Patterson Dental. And I trained people on CAD/CAM and CIRIC and EagleSoft and intraoral sensors. And then that transitioned when I finally retired again from Patterson in 2016. And now I'm retired now. I do a lot of just in-office coaching, which is, you know, I want to be like a fireman. I come in to put out a fire and then I'm out. I don't want to be there full time. I don't expect you to, you know, I don't know of anybody who has a fireman on a retainer.
Right, right.
So I come in and put out a fire and then I'm back at. And that way I can go, you know, do my thing on a daily basis and hang out and have friends and in dentistry. And I'll send them in if it's just a matter of, you know, painting the house. But if you have a fire, call me out, put the fire out.
That is awesome. I love it. I don't know that anybody wants to be a fireman on a regular basis. Like, we like preventing fires more so than putting them out. But I'm really picking up what you're putting down now. You mentioned this term, owners really understanding ownership. Let's talk about the why before the how. Like, that is a very intriguing title. What does that mean to you?
Well, again, years of doing this, my brother-in-law was the worst businessman in the whole world. Phenomenal clinician, but really the worst businessman in the whole world. And coming in and looking at it, I realized, you know, dentists are never trained on that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're in the same business I am, you know, go in and train these guys how to run their businesses.
Yeah.
But they never really get it. And I mean, I'm using that in the general terms. They're not accountants. You know, they're dentists, and that's what they should do, and that's what they do best.
Right.
So what I found is that a lot of them just either abdicate that responsibility to somebody else, like me. You know, I worked at the front desk, but I did everything. But we front desk people, you know, and I always consider myself a recovering front desk person. So, you know, I came in and think about this. If there was a monster ad, it would say, please come run my $1 million business. Mm-hmm. No experience necessary, and the girls will train you. And that's really what I came in as, running this business, having no idea how to run a dental practice. And I realized that almost everybody that I ran into had that same story.
Yeah.
But what was really interesting about when COVID hit, and I always think about March 16th, you know, when COVID sort of shut everybody down, I got these phone calls from doctors who said, all my staff's gone.
Yeah.
I've never had to make, you know, put anything into my software. I've never had to do this. And I need to become the owner of my business again. I need to be able to run my business that I've never had to before.
Right.
And that started this chain of events, which was, now I have to train a doctor to run his software, to understand what the reports mean, to understand the discrepancies that, you know, we typically see, or get explained away from a front office person who says, oh yeah, that's just an adjustment we make for this. But now understanding how that impacts different things.
Yeah.
Understanding why the deposit slip, when I deposited $1,000, I only get $960 out of my bank account. Well, there is credit card fees or care credit fees, et cetera, et cetera. And understanding that, where they never really got it before, they just sort of handed it off to the accountant.
Right. Now, explain the benefit of that transformation, because I totally understand where you're going with this.
Yeah.
But let me be the young dentist, or maybe the busy. I'm so busy, Andre. Like, I didn't go into this for the whole front desk thing. Like, I went to work, and it's crazy busy back there. Help me understand the benefit of going where you're suggesting we go.
I think the biggest benefit is the ability to understand it if you need to understand it. We don't have to. Like, you know, I always say, it's a light switch. Just flick it. You don't need to know how electricity works.
Right.
But there's some value into walking into Home Depot to buy a new light switch and understanding how the electricity actually gets to that switch. So you have to understand it, even if you don't ever do it on a regular basis. You got to understand the process. Or you use that analogy, or you get shocked.
And, I like that. I like her. Yeah.
Now, and what happens a lot of times is, you know, in the course of my consulting time, I mean, I recovered $750,000 worth of theft where it was just, the doctors had no idea it was happening to them.
Right.
And this last year, I saw a lot of doctors who stepped up and said, I've got to run my business. Yeah. differently, not just the guy who writes the checks and the guy who, you know, says yay or nay for appointment time, I mean, vacation time, but I've got to really run this business. And that was just, I mean, it was an unbelievable thing to watch. Yeah, I have, you know, a good 10% of the doctors I worked with over the years were managers and they knew everything about it. But the bulk, the 90%, that was tough.
Yeah.
And this was an eye opener.
Yeah. What's the one? I have so many questions for you. What's the one thing, you know, because again, I got a lot of young dentists and young dental students. Like, what's the one thing they get wrong? Like, consistently, you're like, okay, what's the one thing they get wrong?
I think it's typically insurance.
Yeah.
I think it's this, you know, especially when the PPO market, you know, this kind of thing where, you know, there's this, I'm losing X dollars to XYZ insurance.
Right.
And, you know, look at how much I'm writing off, those kind of things, and not looking at net numbers. You know, I think it's Tarun Agarwal, T-Ball Agarwal, who says, mm-hmm. you know, you know, your gross number is for your ego and your net number is for your groceries.
I you know? Love that. Yeah. T-Bone would say something like that. Him.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that's who I heard it from. But, you know, understanding the difference between the two.
Yeah.
And we are caught up in this cycle of dentistry is supposed to work this way. Dentistry is supposed to work that way. We're supposed to, you know, always do new patients. We're always supposed to get 25 new patients a month per provider. All these norms that I find aren't really normal.
Yeah. You know? That's so interesting. And don't you think, like, you do a lot of work specifically, I mean, you know the details of it inside of Eagles. Don't you think this game of insurances and PPOs, I mean, we're not here to damn them, you know, or make yeah. people, but it's pretty complex now
oh, yeah.
and getting more complex. Wouldn't you agree?
3,000%. And I think what we, you know, the analogy I always make of it is, you know, everybody in the dental office who doesn't understand insurance comes to the table playing checkers and expects that the same board is something that when they put chess pieces on it, they're going to be able to still play.
Right.
It's a completely different game. And the people who created that game control that game. And, you know, it doesn't work the way they expect it. And they seek knowledge amongst a pool of people who have the same basis of knowledge that they have. So, and then when an expert brings up, you know, what's right and wrong, they'll question it because the masses don't say the same thing.
Okay, you just stopped me in my tracks because that's exactly. So again, let me be the young dentist. So yeah. Andre, what you're talking to me. What do I do then? Like, because I get it. You know, you're talking about, you know, nonprofit organizations who take all the profit. I mean, it's a very complex game. And if you don't really understand it, and here's the other thing that we see, and you can speak to this probably more than anybody, is like dentists get so upset. They're like, they get so mad and they don't know like how big the problem is and they don't manage their own expectations. And then I'll often say, can you send me your agreement? And they'll go, what agreement? I'm like, you signed an agreement, dude. And they're like, no, I didn't. They spend a week trying to find it. And then by the time they send it to you, they're like, tell me what it means. I'm like, you signed it. And now you got shared agreements or rental agreements, whatever you want to talk about. So if I'm a young dentist, help me understand, like, what do I need to do for the next 30 years and get my head and my heart straight?
Yeah. Well, first thing is crack the cellophane on that provider agreement binder that you have on your shelf. I mean, you know, I go in all the time and I look at the binders on the shelf, you know, from Delta and from Blue Shield and all those guys.
Right.
And the cellophane's still on the binder. They've never cracked it open to read it. I mean, yeah, when I started the first week, I actually read all those agreements. I actually understood it. And, you know, years ago, you know, when I first started in dentistry, you know, the insurance form had two sides. And the back of it was three lines of legalese. Mm-hmm. And now we're just writing signature on file. We have no idea what we're agreeing with as we send these claims in. So I would tell any new dentist, first of all, you need to reach out to experts. You know, the Tom Lamoli, the mm-hmm. Roy Shelburne, the Teresa Duncan, the Rick Garofalo. You know, those guys. Go to the experts. Don't go to Facebook.
Right.
You know, going to Facebook for insurance information is the same as going for medical information.
Right.
You know, go to the people who have the information, you know, who I would sit at the knee of and find out what they say. and then question when your staff tells you, no, we can't do that, or we have to send out a narrative for this, or we can't, you know, or you can't get paid for that.
Right.
Say, let me ask an expert and get those guys on your, you know, your list of consultants who you talk to on a regular basis.
Yeah, because if you go to an expert, you know, I always love to give these dentists a lot of hope, because you might start here, Andre, you know, and go, you know, you guys don't understand. I got 5,000 patients. I'm 100% PPO. You don't have to stay there. Like you can work out of it, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, you also have to realize, and I realized this when I finally had to find a dentist for myself. The first thing I thought was, which of my clients who I would love sitting in their chairs takes my insurance? Mm-hmm. And I realized as a consumer, when I became a consumer, I realized I needed to look for a coupon. And that's a shame. I mean, I've got enough money that I can spend on dentistry, but I realized that my leading indicator was towards insurance.
Yeah.
So our patients go that way. And if you're in the middle of, you know, the big mitten of Michigan, and you've got a lot of GM retirees, those guys, they think insurance first.
Yeah.
So where you are makes a big difference. You know, where the practice is going. You, a young dentist who bought a practice, who might be, you know, engorged with PPOs, that's a transition that you've got to really think through and understand the process and understand. And that's where, you know, like the Disney and the Ritz-Carlton in me come out and say, we've got to build this theme park where we can get somebody to buy that $15 ice cream cone.
Yeah.
You know, we can't just make that transition all of a sudden our ice cream cones are 15 bucks. We're going to lose our audience. You know,
for sure. And going back to owners understanding ownership, you're already starting to drop a few words I just absolutely love. You use the word KPI and leading. Can you help us understand a little bit of the psychology? Because that's really important as an owner. Yeah. Like I don't, and you hear this, let me throw another mixed bag in there. You know, I didn't do this for the numbers. I didn't do this for, like, speak to both sides of that.
Well, I always say this, you know what? I have doctors who, and the first thing I always used to ask my clients was, you know, tell me what you want to do after work.
Right.
Forget the office. Tell me what you want to do after work. Tell me what your passions are. Do you want to spend, you know, do you want to go on a mission trip? Do you want to do that kind of stuff? You know, let's talk profit first. And then we can make everything else happen. So when I talk to young doctors and they're saying, you know what, I didn't learn this stuff and I don't care. I just want to get my hands wet. I go, yeah, but how much do you want to pay?
Right.
You know, do you want to pay to be in dentistry or do you want to be paid to be in dentistry? And understanding KPIs, key performance indicators, understanding the norms in dentistry. If we do that, then we also can help ourselves with understanding the business of dentistry. You know, understanding the payroll is going to be your biggest chunk of the money. You know, understanding that for every dollar you make, you're going to be paying 60 to 65 to 75% of that dollar to do that. You know, I used to tease some of my doctors and saying, hey, look, if we put the same amount of effort into selling Avon at a 30% overhead, imagine how much we're going to be putting in our pockets as we do in dentistry.
For sure. I never thought of it like that. So now go back to the word leading, because like, now, and let me pepper this or, you know, or sprinkle this or, you know, say that like a lot of times the lagging part, I mean, I've been doing this for 25 years. It's really easy to talk lagging, like very easy to talk lagging. It's not as easy to talk leading, and explain where you were going with that.
See, I love seeing my doctors who, you know, first of all, you know, let me back up and say this. Every part of a practice needs to be broken into four parts. All right. Okay. And if you've ever seen The Prophet, he talks about three of profit on MSNBC. Yeah. He talks about people, process, and profit.
Ooh, okay.
All right. So those are the three buckets that are the most important leaders in a practice. So we got to have the right people. We got to have the right processes. And we got to have the right profitability.
Right.
Just it has to be, or we shut the lights off. All right. The fourth part of that, which is the most important thing that I do and the most important thing that I think you do too, is work on the philosophy of the practice. Those are the four P's: people, process, profitability.
Love it.
And philosophy. I can't hire anybody unless they match my philosophy.
Yeah.
I can't hire anybody unless they work within my profitability. I can't hire anybody unless they work within the processes we go through. So as long as I have those things in place, then the rest of it works out. And right. You lead with those things. You lead with how much do we need to make this month? If we're going to talk about, you know, the KPIs of money, what procedures can we do in the practice And how can I lead my team through those things if I don't have processes in place? I mean, if you're an endodontist, if you don't have good processes, you're out of business, right?
Right, totally.
And then when it comes to the profitability, you know, how do I lead people at the same time? You know, there's a Ferrari in my parking space, you know, and I'm saying, oh, no raises this month.
Right.
How do I work those things so that they all, again, match through my philosophy of care, my philosophy of business practice, my philosophy of how I take care of my people? If I work those four elements, then I can lead to the next step. I can lead to the end. You know, I can be a leader amongst other dentists.
Yeah, I love where you're going with that. And first of all, I love that show too. And I love your take on this because, and I've always said, like, I love the word philosophy too, but core values, your favorite people, they line up, you know? So if you and I, and I'm just getting to know you, like, and you know this as a dentist, your favorite patients, we care about the same things. Your favorite team members, we care about the same thing. Your favorite advisors, we just care. And it's not, somebody can give you brilliant advice, but if we don't care about the same things, we're not going to get anywhere on this whole thing. And so what you're saying is, and help me understand this, like owners understanding ownership, you could almost give each one of these a score, you know, 1 out of 10, and then diagnose where we're at, and then quarter over quarter, see if we can improve our scores and where do we put our energy first. And I agree, the philosophy's got to line up, but take us a little bit further in there too. So where do you go next? Let's say philosophy, I would agree philosophy's first, but then where are you going to go second?
And I'm glad you said that. One of the tests I used to always do when I did staff meetings is I would come in with, and I'd give everybody 10 bucks. I mean, hopefully there's not 100 people in the office, but give everybody 10 bucks and say, I want you to spend this in the areas that are the most important to you. And I'd break it into 10 areas.
Okay.
CE, time off, time with family, whatever, and see where that money's going.
Yeah.
And obviously we're just talking percentages of 100. So, I mean, it's an easy one to do.
Right.
And seeing if somebody's putting 40% of their money into time off, you know, something's up there. But if somebody's putting 40% of their money into team building, that also tells us a lot about the practice.
Whoa.
It also tells us that there's an issue that we need to work on.
Okay, let's go to what you're really trying to say. Okay, so how about doctors allowing team members to have the money they need to invest in the needs that they have clear? You know, hey, listen, I get it, but I'm off to Scottsdale. And I'm going to have some fun, and I'm probably going to take a few days off on top of that. I'm going to stay in a really nice Ritz-Carlton, all that kind of stuff. You guys go to the local dental society or just let me know. I mean, I'm being facetious. That's not fair, but speak to that. Speak to
You know, I always say, and this is why I love ADOM so much. I mean, I love seeing the rest of the office get involved in CE.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I love seeing them take the ownership in the practice. And that is a big part of, you know, almost every company that is employee owned, you know, and that, whatever it is, takes pride in that business.
Yeah.
And the doctors have to see that you know, if I'm a dental assistant, you know, and I tease, but as when I did it, when I was a chairside assistant, I wanted to be the best chairside assistant I could be.
Yeah.
I wanted to learn techniques of holding that suction. I wanted to be able to make sure I was not in my doctor's way and not blocking the light. Whatever it was, I needed to be the best at what I was. But I sought CE for that.
Yeah.
And if I had a doctor, and I did have a doctor who'd say, hey, Andre, let me spend the money to get you trained so that you're better at what you do. Believe me, I became a better employee. I became a better dental assistant. I became, you know, those are the kind of things that when you see these, you know, like that in my staff meetings, people investing in that and saying to the doctor, I would put my money into that bucket so that I could go to Panky with you and learn why the heck you want to do equilibration.
Yeah.
You know, let me go with you to Spear to learn how you do this. I love seeing that initiative. And sometimes that's a great way to just sort of, you know, visually see. And so the ownership doctors can see that from everybody else. That's the thing that sort of drives me in a lot of offices. I mean, it's to see that light go off in their head. That's, you know, when I started my Facebook group, to see people who were digging deep in their own practice management software, seeing that light go off in their head and say, wow, this is now I can see why my doctor asked me for this and why I can or how I can fix this issue in the practice.
Yeah, because you never begrudge the money that you invest on other people's education because it always comes back in a great return. It's not a cost. It's an investment that has a huge return. And I love your formula. So again, owners understanding ownership. Help me, if I'm a young dentist listening, What about the people part of it? What would you say to somebody who's just like buying a practice, just getting started? I got three decades, Andre, in front of me. What would you try to help me understand about the people part of your P formula?
The people are obviously the most important,
right?
Because, you know, they're especially if you're a new dentist coming into a practice, this is a family. You know, wow. you're the brother-in-law going to Thanksgiving for the first time. You know, you got to gel with the guys playing football in the backyard and with mom-in-law, and you got to gel, you know, and you got to understand. It's a dance, and it's one of the most unbelievable dances that I do on a daily basis, because, you know, 200 days a year, I'm in a different practice, and, you know, I could be thrown in there as this guy is going to come change things. So I've got to learn that dance. Same thing with a new doctor coming in. You got to understand what happens in that. It's like those ant farms, you know, where the dynamics that we see happening on a daily basis, you either see a fight or you see survival.
Right.
And if you don't do that right, if you don't do that dance properly, everything else is going to fall apart. The relationships that happen between patient and practice. It is one of the most unbelievable things I see on a daily basis is that what happens with the new doctors coming into an old staff. I hope you put it that way, but that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's now, an interesting dance.
You get these conversations. You're in front of a lot of people. You get these questions too. So let me throw them at you. So, you know, easy for you to say, Andre, like, I can't even find anybody out there to answer the ad. Hiring is harder than ever. And then secondly, like, they don't get it. So you know that there's a lot more behind their question. What do you say when a dentist says, I can't find anybody? Oh, wait, I just got one yesterday. My phone is on another, but I had a dentist who I love, and she's like, okay, what would you say to a dental assistant who's trying to hijack me for this crazy salary? Like, it's weird what people are asking. What would you say about all these conversations happening in dentistry on the people side of things now?
This also goes back to not sharing those KPIs, not understanding the business of dentistry. And, you know, if I come into a business and say, hey, I need $1.5 million from you to do training.
Right.
I don't understand that business, obviously, you know, so we have to understand that there's a number. Mm-hmm. And in dentistry, we've never done this right. In corporate America, a lot of the companies that I work with outside of dentistry, there's a salary cap on. I mean, you know, you can say, okay, you want to be a salesperson, you make between this and this.
Right.
Or it's unlimited if you're on commission. But or if you're a waiter, your salary is between here and here. And that's it. There's a salary band in almost everything in dentistry. But we have dental assistants, hygienists, we have front office people who come in and say, you know, I want $1.5 million to be your front office person. You go, where'd you get that number? Oh, yeah. Well, somebody was talking online about what front office people make.
Yeah.
And you got $1.5 million out of that, right?
Yeah, they got to go to a different chat room or a different, like, that's, it's just crazy. I agree. Like, there's a certain limit. And even if you're going to talk about the top limit, I don't mind engaging in a conversation with that. But, like, wealth is a function of contribution. Like, there's a reason they pay, you know, Aaron Rodgers and all these people that much money, or Patrick Mahomes, is like, they bring a lot of value. So it's okay to have that conversation. But I agree. You got to be within normal limits on this.
I'd love to have the office that I could pay NBA, NFL salaries.
Right.
Because imagine what that practice is doing.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I'm just loving this. So I want to just ask you a few more questions, if you don't mind, like on the owner's understanding ownership. Help me understand what process is. When you say process, what do you mean by that?
Well, a lot of things. I think every single dental procedure needs to be a process. Okay. I mean, and I know it is, you know, that curing light has to be on for 15 seconds and off. All those things are there, but I don't think we write down those recipes, and I don't think we use them as recipes. I think we just walk in and say, flour here. Even our hiring processes need to be processes. Our meetings need to be processes. I'm truly of the mindset that everything has to be a process. Mm-hmm. I had just had a big meeting with an office, and I said, you know, one of the things that bugs me the most about dentistry is this idea when we schedule that the doctor can come in at any point and do a hygiene check. Well, but don't you have a process in place that says the doctor needs to come in at the 50 minute mark so that they can see and have this conversation about hygiene where the hygienist can repeat back. And they go, nah, they just come in wherever they go. And I go, well, okay, mm-hmm. then we have the burger on the outside of the bun, and it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
So I look at processes like that, and I know there's going to be margins of error, but let's come up with a process to, so that we can work on that margin.
Yeah, you know, dentists love the minutia of this. So are you really talking about checklists with by steps? Are you talking about paragraphs? Are you talking about workflows? Because I totally agree with you. What does that look like in a great practice? Are they written checklists for each of
yes.
these? Okay.
Yeah. And here's what I like. I like, and I call them stepping stones. I like checklists that are like IKEA instructions, really right. general. I don't want you, because I see checklists in dental offices and I go, nobody will ever read this. Just give me a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and show me, I mean, pictograms are perfect for that. You know, patient sits down, patient gets in the chair, we clean their teeth, you know, and the doctor comes in for an exam. Give me those 5 steps, but don't go into the minutia like patient opens mouth, mm-hmm. instrument goes in the mouth. That's too much.
Oh, yeah.
Just give me 5 steps on every procedure and we're good.
Yeah, because they can deal with that. Like if they have the, you know, the basic big steps involved, they can repeat those processes in that respect.
And I think that I think every process, and this is kind of my test, every process should be something that I can show to a patient and they get.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So I can even pull out my exam process, my checkup process for a patient and go, this is the part, like number 3, that's where you open your mouth. Yeah. Number 4 is where the doctor's going to come in and do the exam. And they would go, oh, that makes perfect sense. And guess what? You'd probably be better off on time because the patient would go, that's right, I can't talk through step 1 if I want to get done by the 60-minute mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't do that. But in theory, you could. You know?
Yeah. And again, I have to have like several more shows with you because I want to cover a whole bunch of topics. But again, you get to see a lot of stuff. It's anyone's guess. What's the future look like in dentistry, like for a young dentist? What would you say, like, this is probably what the future is going to look like for you, and here's what I would suggest. What are you thinking?
I think the future of dentistry is going to be a lot more auxiliaries working in the dental field,
right.
Which means we're going to have very specialized EFTA, RDAs, RH, you know, those guys who are going to be our providers who are going to, you know, supplement what the dentist does.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of young people doing breakdown cleanups of practices. I see a lot of sterilization assistants coming in just because, again, right now we're in a glut for we can't find staff.
Right.
So if we can get key people trained to be the best at what they can do in that process, then I can supplement them with some auxiliary workers who might be floaters, but could be the future of dentistry.
Yeah.
That person who's doing sterilization today is now the EFTA for tomorrow and the hygienist or dentist for the future.
Totally agree with that, because as a dentist, one of your first assignments is to find out what you suck at when you come into the world. That, you know, it's self-awareness for the most part. Like, and the faster you can be you and help other people function at higher levels, which they bring complementing skills to, can you just speak to like self-awareness as an owner? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, and that's going to be something that as we go forward, we're going to see more and more, because the new breed of dentists coming into the practice come in without the baggage of never using computers. They come in with an idea of using technology for impressions, for building crowns, that kind of stuff. They come in with a different mindset than they were when I started 30 years ago. So a lot of that baggage is gone. So we're not over the technology hump and that kind of stuff. But the staff hasn't changed. The staffing and the interaction with people, that's the part that the younger dentists are going to have to get used to. They're going to have to make that transition into understanding that interpersonal skill thing happening.
Yeah.
And you know, that's hard. That's any relationship is getting into the room with a bunch of people and dealing with them, knowing how to prep a crown. That's easy.
Yeah.
A good, as I say,
yeah. A good friend of mine, Gary DeWood, says, you know, dentistry, he tries to teach young dentists this, you know, 51% of dentistry is technical and understanding. 49% of it is the business and people and all those things. And everyone kind of agrees or disagrees with those percentages. What would be your percentages or a different take on that? Is there any thought processes you have on that?
I'd go that same route. And, you know, I teach this course on customer service, and it's called omotenashi, which is a Japanese term, which is about customer service that goes above and beyond. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought I would hire somebody for the on the 51% of the time is I want 51% of the time them to be customer service focused.
Yeah.
49% on the technology.
Totally.
You can be technical, anything you want, but that's not going to get the person to say yes. That's not going to push the person to move forward with care. That stuff is all is all touchy-feely stuff.
Yeah.
That's the best part of it.
Totally agree. Yeah. And we you and I are talking the same language. We use different words and sometimes same words, but like core values. I'm just looking for core values fit first. I don't care how brilliant you are, because you know this. You get people that are around your table and you go, these are my people. You know, you can do anything. Patrick Lencioni said you can dominate any industry if you have a group of people committed to the same purpose and they all care about the same thing. So, oh my gosh, I know I only get so much time with you. I have like so many more questions, but let's do this. Any last thoughts on just what you would say to a dentist who needs to know how important understanding ownership. Any last thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think one of the best things, I've used this example a lot of times, as you build your practice, look at those four things that we talked about, those four pillars that we have to work on. And remember, the strongest pillar is that philosophy pillar. That's the one that's really holding things up. Then step back, and everything that you do in your practice as you go forward, does it apply back to your philosophy? All right, use this as sort of the way to judge anything. On a corner of, you know, the typical fast food corner where there's a Burger King, McDonald's, and a Chick-fil-A, and all right, think about that corner. That same corner has the same pool of people that are customers and employees. Why is it that we might go to the Chick-fil-A over the McDonald's or the Burger King when it's the same pool of people? It is because of their hiring practices, their philosophy of care, and let's just use that as a general term, that's what differentiated those four corners.
Amen.
And if you can always lay back to that one, you realize why at Disney we can charge you $15 for a turkey leg, you know, and nobody cares about the rides.
Yeah.
It's about the experience.
It's a damn good turkey leg too. I've had many of them. So like it's worth every $15, especially when you've been riding the rides as much as my kids
do.
So
there you go.
Andre, I have completely enjoyed this. Like I want people to know, like, so if I'm listening, I've never heard you before. I don't even know. How do I find out more about you? Where would I go? What do you do?
Well, you got to put these red slippers on. You click your heels three times and you'll find me now.
Okay.
So really the best way to find me is just come to my website. It's called The Crew Process. That's my company. And it's about building a crew. You know, I don't like the word team. I truly believe in the crew. We all row together or we get off the boat. TheCrewProcess.com is my website. There's a lot of information there, but you know, I tell people I'm retired, so there's not a lot of information about how to get in touch with me because you don't need to just call me if you need me, but otherwise I'm sitting at the office just waiting to hear from you.
Well, I, for one, am going to come watch you and stalk you and find you and watch you do your magic in front of an audience. And I would encourage you guys, if you're listening on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, or you're watching it, do the same. Cause I know my word of the month is osmosis. By osmosis, you're just going to pick up on a lot of things that are really important. So, Andre, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it, buddy. And so we're going to put everything in the show notes. So if you guys are listening, everything we talked about, you'll see down in the show notes. Just click on it and check more of it out. Andre, can I have you back again in the future? Do you mind?
Anytime.
I'm
just sitting here at the office.
I call it voluntolding. I didn't even ask you. I just basically said you're coming back. So
anytime.
Cool. All right. Well, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. So thank you guys for watching the Best Practices Show. I hope you enjoyed today like I did. And if you did, do us a favor. Just hit that little share button at the bottom. Share that with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see. I've got an incredible lineup ahead, but I really want to talk about the things that you guys want to talk about because I'm enjoying this way, way too much. You can check out all those resources, whether you're watching on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes
or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.